Blog Talk Radio.
Smoke News Radio, episode 009. Here we go, our first article of the evening. GreenEntrepreneur.com talks about, from Alex Olinick, the African cannabis market could reach $7.1 billion by 2023. Immense markets, both domestic and export to Europe, are available if African countries repeal prohibition. This story originally appeared in Benzinga. In the global cannabis landscape, Africa is an overlooked market. This is due to a number of factors, such as the illegality of the plant across the continent and the poor economic conditions that many African countries face. Africa has the potential to become an enormous cannabis market due to the large population and favorable climate that makes growing weed easier than in neighboring Europe. A new report by Prohibition Partners suggests that by 2023, the African cannabis market could reach $7.1 billion. I would imagine euros instead of dollars we're talking about. The status of cannabis in Africa. Africa has a long history of growing and consuming cannabis. In most countries on the continent, the plant is illegal, although it remains widely cultivated and consumed. According to Prohibition Partners, the UN estimates more than 38,000 tons of cannabis are produced across Africa each year, which results in a black market worth billions. Out of the 54 countries on the African continent, only three, Lesotho, South Africa, and Zimbabwe, permit medical use, while Zambia has legislation allowing medical marijuana that has not been enacted. No African countries have clear legislation allowing recreation use. In South Africa, recreational use is illegal, but cannabis was decriminalized for private cultivation and consumption. In Egypt, recreational use is illegal, but tolerated. In Morocco, the prohibition of medical and recreation use is often unenforced, although it is illegal. The first and only country in the region that allows legal cultivation is Lesotho, a landlocked, mountainous country that has a favorable climate, abundant water, and fertile soil for cannabis growing. In other countries, such as Ghana and Nigeria, cannabis is grown illegally, typically for export. The market potential. Legalization could result in a huge market and great export opportunities for businesses that would pay taxes and help enrich the region, according to Prohibition Partners. In Congo, a 100-kilogram sack of cannabis costs between $96 and $128, significantly higher than maize, which fetches $54 for the same volume. Cannabis could also create legal employment opportunities, according to the Morocco Network for Industrial and Medical Use of Cannabis, cited by Prohibition Partners. The clandestine cannabis industry in the country is valued at $10 billion and employs 800,000 people. Overall, Prohibition estimates the African cannabis market could be worth $7.1 billion by 2023. The bulk of this value is allocated to the recreational market, $6.3 billion. The medical market estimate is much smaller, about attention of foreign investors, given the possibility to cultivate cannabis for export. Last year, Supreme Cannabis Company, Inc., SPRWF, 1.3% invested $7.5 million numbers in Medigrow, Lesotho, acquired a 10% stake. Another Canadian cannabis company, Afira, AFA, 1.13, went even further and formed a joint venture with South Africa-based firm Group of Companies. The joint venture Canna Invest Africa acquired a stake in licensed producer medical cannabis extracts in Lesotho, Bear Dynamics, for CA 4.05 million. The biggest deal in Lesotho by a foreign company was made by Canopy Growth Corp. CGC, the 16% in May 2018, the company purchased Daddy Canna Lesotho Pty Ltd, which had a license to cultivate, manufacture, supply, hold, import, export, and transport cannabis and cannabis resin. The total value of the all-stock deal was around $8.8 million at the time. Tilray has not invested in cannabis businesses in the region, but it did start exporting medical cannabis products to South Africa last year. Similarly, Nerva, acquired by Afira, signed an agreement to supply 3 tons of purified THC and CBD extracts per year to Verve. You've been listening to Smoke News Radio, reading from the GreenEntrepreneur.com, from Benzinga originally. African cannabis market could reach $7.1 billion by 2023, written by Alex Olenek. And next on the roll we have today is, let's see, this kind of thing.
A billion people died on the news tonight, but not so many cried at the devil's sight. Well, Mama said, it's just make-believe. You can't believe everything you see, so baby, close your eyes to the lullaby. That it would be alright to put the music behind the news tonight. Well, Mama said, you can't believe everything you hear. The diegetic world is so unclear. So baby, close your ears on the news tonight. On the news tonight, the unobtrusive tones on the news tonight. And Mama said, why don't the newscasters cry when they read about people who die? At least they could be decent enough to put just a tear in their eyes. But Mama said, it's just make-believe. You can't believe everything you see, so baby, close your eyes to to the lullabies on the news tonight.
Which funded the city. Tom Havoc's CEO said that despite the specter of Brexit, he sees better prospects in the United Kingdom than on Europe's more saturated markets. Israel's Kadaiva Research aims this year to become the first cannabis company to list on London's main stock market as part of efforts. £4 million, $4.8 million for clinical trials and to launch over-the-counter products. 60%. Cannabis companies have listed in Canada and Israel, and lawyers say London has a potential to attract money from diverse sectors, including food and health, which could use cannabis as an ingredient. Cannabis CEO Abir Natamir says he sees better prospects in London than in more saturated markets, despite the upheaval caused by Britain's departure from the European Union, and believes that his work being a pioneer in overcoming regulatory hurdles. In this industry, the first mover advantage is significant. He said, adding that the first cannabis company to have listed and small mining companies helped to drive a surge of disease. In Israel, medical cannabis is one of the fastest growing sectors on the Tel Aviv Stock Exchange, prompting the Israeli regulator to warn May that it could become an investment bubble. And Amo already has a promise of £1.4 million from spinning opportunities a cash sales in London, which has said it is for more acquisitions. Cannabis products are delivered through a vaping device, which has approval from the Israeli Health Ministry. It is also seeking to launch over-the-counter products in Germany, Britain, and Tokyo, said. Lawyers are cautious, though. While some cannabis products are available in shops in Britain, there are strict regulations that are uncertainty of the extent to which laws will be relaxed. A lot of people are wanting to have a conversation about the sector, but investors need to tread carefully and take guidance to navigate what is complex regulatory landscape. Claire McDonald, partner of the Person Growth School, said that is an alternative investment market aim for growing companies has already had an existing sector. GM Pharmaceuticals, developer of marijuana-based epilepsy treatments, was listed here on June 21st, 2016. The company is still listed on the U.S. NASDAQ, GWPH, and its shares have risen more than 8% this year. They received a boost in July after the company's marijuana-based Rarities, put that one together. What else do we have here? Yes, yes, next on the block. Let's see what has happened. Oh, yes, very good, very good. Not very good. This is from the London Free Press. By Free Press staff. In August. Employee hurt as armed suspect. Rob legal will monitors. Norfolk OPP are investigating after they saw several armed people robbed a large quantity of marijuana from an illegal pot producer and injured one person. Police say the suspects entered the pot growing farm on session 14 east of Simcoe about 2:30 p.m. Sunday. Once inside, police say the suspects assaulted a worker who suffered minor injuries before driving off in a red Ford pickup truck with a cap on the box along with his small truck. The OPP are asking anyone with information is asked to call police at
yeah.
of note on Wednesday is an investors conference, as well as an introduction to the growing ranks of British doctors. What books for the future of the next doctor training programs everywhere across Europe without borders? Even in that sense, at the moment, who are joining the medical cannabis crusade? Thursday's plan events also include a focus on connected women in the street to investors, particularly of the medical kind. The MedKRX's third pilot to market workshop, the Bailey Digital Prescription. It will also include a groundbreaking seminar about cannabis certification for doctors at King's College, long known for its critical studies about that supposed connection between cannabis and a host of nasty medical illnesses and conditions starting with schizophrenia. There's also a round of private parties, events, industry soirees, and more that are invited. However, as the most cannabis industry events, showing up and tagging along is one of the best ways network of new people. It'll be a busy week for sure. The entire cannabis debate absolutely not hitting in this space in the UK in a way that it's not other places. Why is this significant? The British are finally kicking off their version of the industry. That said, problems abound, including that the kind seen in places like Germany with the added whip, with further disruptions, thanks to still pending Brexit. On the healthcare discussion, it's hard to find a fence that any chance of the length of the average cannabis patients who are still struggling to get their numbers over 100 in the entire country 6 months after Schedule 2 prescriptions were authorized. However, it is also equally hard to find anyone in the ranks of the chronically ill at least who would welcome Local 1 U.S. style approach to healthcare. Even if they can avail themselves of private healthcare coverage that is just 10% of the population. The entire cannabis debate is absolutely big space in the UK in a way it is not in other places, including Germany, that it's beyond Brexit discussion, in part a testimony to the creakiness of the British system, although the German one at present also leaves a lot to be desired. Nobody wants an American system. Canadians are also dealing with the problem that so far, Canadian public health insurance does not cover medical cannabis either. Like it or not, this is also a theme that covers cannabis politics in Europe, as much of the industry does not know how to channel the partisan. The Green Fest movement is certainly alive and well in the UK, nor should be underestimated. And that means that it at the moment is also getting some of the biggest industry players who are the only ones allowed to market entry where it counts, the regulator wants, including medical. On the CBD front, despite assurances by activists as late as last year, certainly over the field enthusiasm on the potential of this market, novel foods still applies. But a conversation will certainly get interesting is the ability to distribute through online pharmacies, unlike in Germany, where this is still promoted. And for all drugs, not just cannabis, but even here, don't look for the UK to become just another Amazon outlet. New rules, including GDPR, so affecting the UK, continue to do so no matter what happens as well. This has to do with what is called trusted nation status that affects regulatory issues, pharmaceuticals, but also financials, which is why the idea of the UK staying out entirely on its own as a very smart state is also ludicrous. Marguerite Arnold, FKX, and European Cannabis Week, top first of Cannabis Street Journal, Business Radio, and this one, the National Geographic. About just buying me that strawberry, why pigs are doing to survive. This is National Geographic. This was about a month or two ago. Indigenous communities in the Congo are harvesting marijuana as long as they can remember. Now, with no land to call their own, they turn to selling with dire consequences. From North Kivu to Congo, Nana sleeps on a pillow of marijuana. It's a trick his grandfather taught him to make the buds more potent. He explains while tending his spare plot at the edge of the mud hut village. The cur offered him a few dozen plants is unimpressive, but his crop was lush. He says, before Kalibuki's army soldiers came and confiscated them, across this eastern province, the epicenter of the country's conflict, many pygmy communities grow marijuana, eking out of eager and dangerous living. Marijuana is illegal in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which occupies the bullseye of Africa. The Afro-Negro colonial regime, decades of dictatorship, and more than 20 years of civil war, and 6 million dead. There are few laws that can't be bent. We're one of the poorest countries in the world, a population of around 600,000 indigenous forest people, widely known as the Pygmies, occupy the lowest economic rung, being marginalized by the non-indigenous Congolese population they call Bantu, and sometimes even kept as slaves. A recent study of the nearly 27,000 pygmies living in Gorkini found that the majority survive on less than $1 per day. The average Congolese income is only slightly higher at $2. For them, marijuana can offer a reliable income. Their treatment at the hands of the Congolese military and the police is less predictable. Sometimes they say they are beaten and arrested for growing the plant, and other times soldiers and police offer. Officers are their customers. A lone marijuana plant marks the money path that leads to Nana's village, an hour's drive from Eastern Congo's war-torn capital, Goma. Wooden scooters piled with firewood clog the road there, while on the shore a wooden roast corn over smoke and charcoal. The constant jolt of car wheels dipping in the potholes provides what's rightly called a Congolese massage. Twice a week, a small group of pygmies rises at 6 a.m. and treks them 3 hours into the forest of Africa's oldest national park, Virunga. Above them looms the volatile volcano near Gongo. In 1952, when the area was designated as a park, they were evicted, and the hunting and gathering that fed them was outlawed. Their journey into the park is illegal, but they continue to return to their former territory to gather honey, potatoes, and medicinal plants. One of the dozen members of the Bambuti pygmy community trained to identify the perfect form those want to seek out what crop they say their ancestors would long for them. Marijuana. In the forest, the plants grow wild. The pygmies harvest plants and seeds when their village stock is low. There, nobody can break our tradition. Mubaba, a 36-year-old chief of the village, says of the forest, worldwide, it's estimated that 20 million indigenous people have been displaced in the name of on these foraging journeys, when Bawa says members of his community have been arrested or killed by rangers of the Virunga National Park, in a region with environmental threat by armed groups, oil companies, and poachers, Virunga is hailed as an example of successful and sustainable conservation. Rangers are extensively trained. Community development proven called Virunga Alliance has become one of the area's biggest employers. But tensions remain between those protecting the park's 2 million acres. One third of the world's elk gorilla is called Virunga. The communities that have relied on this ecosystem for centuries. Virunga's chief warden, Manuel de Miron, says it is the administration. Others put it much later, with the rise of ivory trees in the 1700s. At some point, marijuana reached the pygmies who traditionally are hunter-gatherers that don't cultivate crops. In the early 1970s, found in Eastern Congo grew the most marijuana and offered the best quality. At the time, pygmies were getting marijuana from farmers, and only groups had begun to settle down and grow their own. But he isn't shocked to hear that pygmies have become extinct. In some cases, it was their first domesticated crop, he says. From the village pots, the plant makes its way to the regional capital, Goma. There, pulsating nightclubs, it is easy to find a variety of illegal substances being peddled. Mostly the wealthy local businessmen and foreign aid workers who power a luxury economy that exists alongside the typical Congolese one. In his spacious office at Goma's police headquarters, Police General Biro Achakangu lists the issues he's dealing with: armed militias, internally displaced people, natural disasters, a lawless order. He seems to have little time for the question of marijuana. His pygmies are using this marijuana as medicinal plants, and is limited to just them. That's fine, but we have to investigate, he says. Today, marijuana is not only for pygmies, but it's become a national issue. Behind the One World Tourist Market, which provides last-minute baskets and masks to visiting foreigners, is a couch-stuffed clubhouse of a man known around town as the King of Marijuana. He talks shop with a group of young men and his woman expertly rolls a joint. He is one of the biggest players in a flourishing illicit business that relies on Congolese soldiers. The United Nations' largest peacekeeping force, visiting diplomatic food traffic celebrities. The 20 pounds a day that he moves comes from the lawless rebel held territory, and he claims the best strain is unleaded. Their technique of letting it sit for months makes it extra strong. In public, large quantities of marijuana are confiscated and burned by law enforcement. But many members of the Congolese army both use and sell the drug. According to interviews with pygmies, soldiers and police general, they're often underpaid and sometimes not paid at all. Due to widespread corruption, many extort civilians to run businesses on the side. When JP is not clad in his tasseled blue army uniform, he dons a red, yellow, and green clothing of Rastafari, smokes pot 3 times a day, listens to reggae. For nearly 2 decades, a 41-year-old military sub-lieutenant has been supplementing his $100 army salary for the side business. Instead of going to steal a loot, it's better that I sell marijuana, he said. I do it for my family to survive. Marijuana, he adds, sends his 6 kids, ages 4 to 18, to school, or feeds the books and uniforms to be prohibited for the average Congolese. Most of the stock comes from pygmies, and pulling back was brought in home to the back of the week. And in the case that had been stored for a long time, he pinches off a mess of buds, blows it to quarter-sized bulk. He sells up to 50 leaves per day, mostly members of his club suit, and makes around $10. His bosses know that he sells occasionally arrested, yet he says a $50 bribe guarantees he'll avoid jail time. If you arrest me today, I'll sell tomorrow. He says, my children have grown up because of marijuana. Pygmies do marijuana in a similar way. The region is flooded with international aid organizations. A few groups are focused on indigenous rights, holding the attention Congo and BC, technically should be allowed to cultivate marijuana. It was a tradition even before laws were written. There are few options for survival in the shanty town outside a camp or international displaced persons called. I'm sitting here because I have no jobs to a farmer with 10 children. He gestures at the plants go beside his tiny mud pack hut. Does a sound as marijuana children get some food. On the outskirts of camp lives 65 big families, which are created by 2007 after fleeing rebel fighting by territories. Since then, thousands of other companies families escaped civil violence and settled in camp. But only the six pygmy families who agreed to stop their marijuana are officially listed internationally as displaced people and received humanitarian assistance in camp prison. The others refuse and so are not registered. While they can access water and health clinics, they're not on the food distribution list. The clinic won't stay forever. It is for reasons. We will always have that water. That was National Geographic. Why pygmies are dearly needed to survive by Nina Strosser. Next, we have the Irish Times will flow across the bog to the bog. This is from the IrishTimes.com, read by Jason Brodsky of Smoke News Radio. Written in 2019, using bogs for cannabis farms could create jobs. This is written by Brian Cooper. Transforming the Ireland's state-owned bogs into vast cannabis farms could create a lot of jobs, Minister of State for Natural Resources Sean Henry has said. Bord de Mona is carrying out a feasibility study into whether cultivation of marijuana for medical use could replace traditional turf cutting on thousands of hectares run by the company. The initiative is part of the semi-stage brown to green strategy to switch to a low-carbon sustainable business model. It also comes after Bord de Mona announced nearly 500 jobs with lost in the Midlands under a plan to end peat harvesting in 45 of its 62 currently active bogs within the next 2 years. Both Mr. Kennedy and Minister for Health Simmons Harris have met management at the semi-state company this week to discuss the possibility that Ireland could manufacture its own medical cannabis supply and also export it. In his latest remarks on the proposal, Mr. Kennedy said medical cannabis has the capacity to create a decent amount of jobs. This has real potential. The possibility exists for DMA could do it for other governments and other countries, he added. This could create a lot of jobs. I would add that this at an early stage of development, obviously the number of regulatory rules are required. Mr. Kennedy said, it is reported for the Monet could embark up to 5,000 hectares of its 80,000 hectare land for cannabis farming. Legislation. In June, Mr. Harris signed into law legislation allowing people access to medical cannabis on a limited basis over the next 5 years. The move allows compassionate access to cannabis for medical reasons in cases where conventional treatment is failed. He expects the first drugs covered by the scheme to be available in the autumn. Asked at the time of the possibility of more demand, growing cannabis to supply products and distributors said that if the medical cannabis access program proves successful, we believe Ireland should no foreign markets. The country's health service executive will cover the cost of prescriptions for patients who qualify in medical conditions so long as treatment is consultant initiated. Online reimbursement approval is accepted and all standard approved treatments have been exhausted. However, patient enrollment is not automatically eligible for reimbursement. Only a small number of patients have received special government approval for medical cannabis. The new rules will make access more systematic by putting the decision in the hands of medical consultants. Today is a significant milestone, as Mr. Steiner has said in his statement. The purpose of this program is to facilitate passionate access to cannabis for medical reasons where conventional treatments fail. Ireland's medical cannabis program is similar to ones already underway or in the works in countries such as Denmark and France, and that it will run for a predetermined amount of time. Ireland's health department issued the following guidance for potential suppliers and importers of cannabis-based medical products. Appropriate medical marijuana products are defined as special control drugs legislation. Only products that make the list specified control drugs can be prescribed by medical consultants. Details on how to apply for a license to supply or import medical cannabis products, including packaging and requirements, can be found. Companies must complete an application form for their products to be considered for approval. The application form from the health products regulatory board. Medical consultants will be able to prescribe a cannabis-based treatment when standard treatments have failed for spastic associated multiple sclerosis. Their track will not involve associated with severe refractory treatment. For more information, contact the Compliance Department of the Controlled Drugs Licensing Section of the Health Products Regulatory Board at controlleddrugs@hpra.ie. This is my life. And I am launched by the medical marijuana trial. Let's jump back to Africa. Let's go to Zimbabwe. By Thomas Edward, Zimbabwe will repeal laws banning cannabis cultivation. Seeking to bolster revenue exports, Zimbabwe will repeal its laws that prohibit the production of cannabis. An announcement came Tuesday from the country's information minister, Monica Mutsipagawa, who said the reform will allow farmers to grow industrial hemp to export. Ultimately, the goal is for hemp to replace tobacco in Southern Africa, the nation's leading crop export. With global tobacco sales suffering decades of health cannabis, recent rise of vaping products, combined with the worldwide rollbacks on prohibition against cannabis and hemp, the changes to the laws signal that Zimbabwe is looking toward the future. Mr. Magawa told members of the press gathered in the capital city of Harare, as quoted by Bloomberg, said, the crop can be a good substitute to the leading export crop tobacco, which is at risk of being banned globally. Zimbabwe is here as one of the deepest economic crises. The country has seen in the decade with staggering inflation, foods, and devastating drought, millions hungry. A report from the United Nations last month found that more than a third of households in rural Zimbabwe amounted to about 3.5 million people are dangerously food insecure. By 2020, the report said 59% of rural households and more than 5.5 million people will be food insecure. That crisis has coincided with Zimbabwe's rollback of anti-cannabis laws. As a cash-strapped and conservative country continues to reconsider its prohibition, in the spring of last year, Zimbabwe and became only the second African country to legalize marijuana for medical purposes. Lesotho, the tiny landlocked nation encircled by South Africa, became the first in 2017. But government officials continue to work out regulatory barriers. Last year, a month after announcing the new law on medical cannabis, Zimbabwe hit the brakes on its implementation as it worked to all the United Nations treaty. Mutsava Gawa told reporters on Tuesday that medical marijuana took a long time to set up structure. In March, Zimbabwe approved the first license for private cannabis company, Precision Cannabis Therapeutics Zimbabwe, to produce medical marijuana under the country's new law. As of February, Zimbabwe government had reportedly received applications from 37 companies to produce cannabis, a number of whom small grow. The government of Zimbabwe is open for business and welcomes investors in all sectors of the economy, including licensing for the production of medical cannabis. Tiffany Delivery, the chief operating officer of Precision Cannabis Therapeutics Zimbabwe. You guys ready to go? Zimbabwe. Let's go. Get this going. We've got to figure out the world. Because it's here. And it rolls. And it's going around in circles. That is true. This is from the London Free Press by Dale Carruthers. Second pot lottery closes, fewer applicants expected. Cities and towns in southern Ontario will soon find out whether they'll be home to any of the second wave of cannabis retail stores opening in the fall. Applicants vying for a shot at the 42 marijuana retail licenses had until Friday to submit an application to the Alcohol and Gaming Commission of Ontario, AGCO, the province's pot rating center, with the winners to be announced on August 20th. But one leading cannabis lawyer says the financial requirements placed on applicants may be problematic, because many financial institutions remain skeptical on the marijuana industry. Last go round, the big question was how many entries are there going to be? Ottawa-based lawyer Trina Fraser said of Jeremy Pottery that drew more than 17,000 expressions of interest. And I think the more relevant question this government is how many qualified entries are there going to be? Lottery applications were required to, among other things, get confirmation from a bank or credit that they have access $25,000 in cash or short-term investment for the ability to quickly obtain a $50,000 letter of credit. Some hopeful retailers couldn't get the necessary documents from the bank or credit union, while others received paperwork that's unlikely to meet the agency requirements. I'm concerned that this is going to lead to those entities being disqualified, she said Friday, while most financial institutions have shunned the cannabis industry. Ontario-based credit union Alterna has moved in to fill the void. It has been in the industry pretty much hardcore for years now, and it's been very friendly to the industry when the other banks and credit unions have not been. Fraser said to Alterna, the AGCO announced in July it licensed an additional 50 pot shops, including 80 reserve. Okay, the London Free Press about Ontario and those things going on there. Perfect, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you, everyone, for listening to Smoke News Radio. Jason Brodsky, you are our host on the microphone. And here you go, little Jack Johnson.
A billion people died on the news tonight, but Not so many cried at the devil's side. Well, Mama said, it's just make believe. You can't believe everything you see. So, baby, close your eyes to the lullaby. That it would be alright to put the music behind the news tonight. Well, Mama said, you can't believe everything you hear. The diegetic world is so unclear. So baby, close your ears on the news tonight.